Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to learn with everyone. So we've been talking, started last week about the responsibilities of a maschir being the one renting out the property, to the socher, the one who is using the rental property, in a case where the object is either damaged or impaired. And I actually wanted to reframe the conversation the first thing that's important to note is that the type of rental we're talking about has two elements to it. This, at least that's the case that the Gemara really is focusing on. And that is as follows. On the one hand, there is the thing, the object, the animal that you are renting out, and that is part of the agreement. I am agreeing to pay you to use a particular animal for a certain amount of time or for a certain task. However, as I just actually mentioned, the other element of this is in that in our particular situation, the socher is stipulating that he wants to accomplish something with that animal. So, for example, the case is he goes to the maschir and says, I need an animal, I need a donkey, and I need it to transport merchandise to, say, you know, Toronto, and that's where I want to sell on the marketplace. And that's the type of animal I need. And what we were discussing next week is that what in the case that the animal dies or is completely broken in the language of the Gemara, crippled, completely ineffective or incapable of transporting anything, what are the ramifications, what responsibility does the maschir have? And what we noted that the Gemara says there are essentially two types of rentals. Right? One type of rental is where at the point of the original agreement, the socher goes to the maschir, and the maschir says, I am agreeing to rent you chamor zeh. I'm agreeing to rent out to you this chamor, this donkey. In such a case, the Gemara says that what the socher has the ability to do in terms of replacing the animal that died is to sell the carcass, the navela of the animal for the meat, for the skin, and that is all. There is no responsibility upon the maschir to provide a replacement. All the socher has is access to that nevela. However, in the case of chamor sam, right, where the renter, the maschir says, I will rent a chamor out to you. He doesn't specify anyone in particular. And then eventually he gives him one. In such a case, then there is an obligation to provide a replacement. Now, here's where I think I want to reframe the discussion. So there's two questions you could ask. One, the answer is, which is very obvious, and one, it's a bit more complicated in the context of halacha. So the question of why he has to provide a replacement is not a very strong question, as many pointed out last week. I know Jerry and Jeffrey are both saying, what do you mean? It's so obvious, which is, it's sort of an implied warranty. The implication is, if I'm telling you, sure, I'm happy to rent an animal to you so that you can reach Toronto, and then the animal dies before you get to Toronto, we can all understand that it's understood that it's not sufficient to say, you know what, that was one animal, tough, I'm sorry. It's obvious that the implication is that, no, I should enable you to do what you wanted to do when you rented the animal. And I think that's true. I think that certainly is the case in terms of the intentions and understanding between the socher and the maschir. Where it gets complicated is not the why, but the how. And if you looked at the actual language of the Rishonim, they're asking bameh. And that is, the complication is, it's not clear in halacha that an implied warranty should be binding. Number one, it's not clear, and I'd say even if at the outset of this agreement, the maschir said verbally, I will give you a replacement if the animal dies midway. So that's a promise, and it's a commitment. But verbal commitments like that are not halakhically binding. Unless you do a kinyan of some sort, which specifically commits certain assets to the claim, generally we would say that such a verbal commitment wouldn't be binding. Furthermore, even if it does create a certain obligation that I accepted upon myself to do, there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to be chozer, to back out of that obligation. So even if I said, when I said I'm going to give you another chamor, that did something, that created a certain like liability that the masir has. Well, if he says, okay, you know, I don't want to do that anymore, what's to stop him from doing that? So that is the standpoint of the Rishonim who are addressing this question. Again, it's not a question so much as why. We understand that implied warranty is the idea here. That's why he needs to provide a replacement. But how is that binding? That is the question that the Rishonim were bothered by. Is that clear? Understood? Good. So this was the problem. Now, just to clarify, what they're asking is, in a typical case, so you go up to the pen where all the donkeys are, and the masir brings out, you know, donkey number one, looks great, looks like a healthy donkey, we're assuming there's no trickery going on here, he's not fooling anybody, it's perfectly healthy, no one did anything negligent. What happens then is the socher takes that donkey and leads it out of the pen. At that point, in halacha, that's when the original skiris is binding. Right? At that point, the socher has the right to use the animal for the period of time or until a appointed task is completed. And at that point, the masker can no longer say, I want my donkey back. That is clear. But what's not clear is what creates the obligation on anything beyond that original donkey. So I did a mishicha, I did a kinyan on that first donkey. That's fine. But why should, and this is what the Rishonim are bothered by, why should the masir then have to give any other donkey? Where did the kinyan acquire that right of the socher? So we have three different, if you look at the table now, that I list neatly arranged boxes, that I arranged for you here on your source sheet, thank you. I appreciate it. I will note that I made a bit of a dangerous mistake. If you look at the first heading, b'men echayev ha-masir l'hamir chamor, Echad is what it says, say Acher. Right, Torchino noted that in other contexts, the switching Acher and Echad can be very heretical. And not a mistake you want to make, but it should say Acher. And as Ezra pointed out, in this particular context also, it's exactly the opposite of what I wanted to say. It's not Laham Echamor Echad. No, it's not just one donkey, it's another donkey. But the question is, what obligates the mask here? So the first camp of Rishonim, which is the Ramban of the Ram, which we saw last time, says nothing. Nothing really obligates the renter to provide a replacement. That's not an absolute requirement. All we're saying is that if he doesn't do it, the socher can say, I'm not paying you. And not just, I'm not paying you for the half of the journey I couldn't make because the animal died, but the Ramban thinks, I'm not even paying you for the first half of the journey, even for what's already been traveled, even, you know, what I actually accomplished perfectly, fairly. Now that, on the one hand, that is pretty novel. I'm not even sure that all the Rishonim agree to that, and I want to discuss in the next part of the shiur why that would be, or when we would say that you don't have to pay for the first half of the journey because it died in the middle. But the Ramban is agreeing that no, you don't have to provide a replacement. There is nothing binding the masir to give another chamor. That's not what the Gemara meant when it said chayav la min lo chamor. All it meant was if you want to get paid, then you need to provide a replacement. So that is the first approach in the Rishonim. The second approach essentially agrees to the Ramban that the first original Mashiach, simply by taking that first Hamor, shouldn't create an obligation. What they say then is that the Mishnah must be talking about a case where there was an additional Kinyan, an additional act of acquisition which obligates the renter. Now, on the one hand, that is a textual problem, right? Because if that is really the case, then the Mishnah should have said it's a case where the Masker or the Socher did an original Kinyan. But conceptually, that is what they argue. So the first opinion we have here is the Muke Yosef, which we saw last week. And he says that it's not just that at the original, at the outset of this rental, the masir went and pulled the chamor. He also paid for the rental up front. Right? So let's say the rental fee was, I will pay you $100 so that I can use your chamor for the next period of time to get until Toronto. And back, let's say, if that was the agreement, he pays $100 up front. In addition to pulling the animal, he then pays him the money. And that is what obligates him to the mosque or to then provide a replacement. Okay? Now, this, first of all, the first weakness of this argument is that generally we don't say that Kinyan Kesef would acquire a movable object. Right? Generally the rule is money, just giving someone money, at least in rabbinic level, will only require real property, like land or a house, but it doesn't acquire movable property. So that if I go to the store and I give money to the, and he puts it in the cash register, it's not mine until I actually take the object. Until that point, he can retract. Either side can retract. If so, then why should, assuming, now that's essentially what Muki Yosef is saying, and this is important, is when you give him money, so then whatever other donkeys the mosque has in his possession, you're also, quote-unquote, acquiring those in the event that a replacement is necessary by giving him this money. Now, what the Muki Yosef will say is that why is it that generally money doesn't acquire movable objects? So the reason is because we're afraid of the following. What's going to happen? I pay you for your merchandise. I don't even have it yet. I didn't take it yet, but I paid you. That's why I went home, for whatever reason. It's still sitting there in your attic or in your warehouse or wherever it is. Then there's a fire. The fire burns all the produce. And you say, well, you paid me the money already. Tough. And that's why the Gemara says, therefore, the sages came and said, you have to then go, and at least according to one opinion, go and actually bring the produce into your possession, and so as to avoid this this situation. Says the Muki Yosef, is that relevant to a case of a rental? Think about it. I rent your animal, but I haven't used it yet. Okay? So if there's a fire, that's not just to the detriment of the person who wants to use the animal. That's also the detriment of the owner. Right? That's not, so he says the logic, which generally precludes money, kesef, from acquiring movable objects, doesn't apply in a case of a rental, and therefore, in this specific situation, the kesef is what acquires the right of the socher to a replacement.
So that explains how you get rid of the normal problem.
Okay.
But I still don't understand why that helps our original problem.
Meaning? Good, meaning?
Just because you give him kesef, why is that giving the right to get all the other animals?
So, it's a good point, and I think it does relate to what we mentioned last time with the service, which is that there's two elements to this deal, right? I say two things. I say, I'm getting a chamor, not this chamor. I am buying or renting a chamor from you to reach Toronto. You provided me with chamor number one, but that didn't reach Toronto. It didn't. I didn't get the chamor to reach Toronto, so the Muki Yosef is arguing that by paying you, If I just pull the chamor, I might have said, you might have told me that you're going to provide me a chamor to get to Toronto, but why is that binding? There was no kinyan, there's no act of acquisition that actually relates to anything else but this original animal. Once I pay you, so the kesef can at least be kone, the other animals that the maskir has in stock, such in order to complete this arrangement and get me to Toronto. I'm kona two things. I'm kona the usage of an animal, and I'm kona the usage of the animal until I get to Toronto. So now, I think this is a fair argument. It would seem that according to Muki Yosef, and we'll get to this in a bit, if there were no other donkeys in stock, then you're out of luck. Right? All the kesef can be kona is whatever you had. It's not kona anything else. If you didn't have another donkey, well, I'm sorry. Okay, does that answer your question-ish? Okay.
But that doesn't stop him.
I just don't see why paying the money makes everyone think that you've acquired all the other donkeys.
You haven't acquired the donkeys. Again, we all agree that last time there's an implied warranty here, right? It's understood that I'm not, if I rent donkey A and I don't get what I wanted from it, which I told you I wanted from it, that I should be entitled, the why is clear, right? I should be entitled to a replacement. The question is, that might be, you know, in terms of like the justice of it, that's true. But what actually binds the how? What actually binds the monster to that agreement? And the answer that the Muki Yosef is saying is kesef can be a binding factor here. The kesef binds him to the requirement to provide a replacement until I get to where I need it to go.
So it makes it beyond a verbal promise.
Correct. That is the approach that Nimukyo would say. The Rivet is a similar approach, although I think it might be a bit more, the scope might be more expansive, yes.
But that doesn't stop him from renting out those other animals.
No.
So he's still stuck.
Again, well, if he did rent them out, then I believe the lokeach, the renter, socher, say socher, the rentee, legally, the rentee, the socher, would have the right to say, that donkey that you rented out after argument is mishubad, is committed to our transaction. He has a right to it, if you can't provide him any other one. I would think so. I think that's what the Nimukyo Yosef would argue. That would be a way of fulfilling it. But yes, when I paid the kesef, I'm entitled to. I acquired a right beyond just this chamor to ensure that I get to finish my agreement. The Ravid argued that what we're talking about here is a kinyan sudar. So again, it's adding a lot of information. But in addition to, when I went, so the Mishnah is talking about a case where in addition to going to the pen and pulling the animal, I also, I believe the case would be here, that I also took a sudar. I took a handkerchief, and by taking the handkerchief, that obligates the maskir to provide a chamor until he reaches the destination. And there is where I think the Ravid already is bordering on calling this not just a question of renting out a particular object, but now it becomes also a requirement to provide a service. Meaning, it's not just that I'm renting out a particular type of donkey to you. Once you pull that sudar, I'm obligating myself to provide you with a means of getting to the destination via this chamor. Just the mechanism. Just the mechanism.
Just the mechanism.
Is kesef sufficient, or do you need something additional?
So would the Ruki Yosef be okay with the Kenyan Sudar?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the Ravid might not be okay with the Kenyan Sudar.
He is not.
He's not.
No, he's not. He says kesef is not koin metaltalin.
Okay.
You can only acquire real property with kesef. Whether it is a schirus, a rental, or an actual sale, it won't work. And that's the... So that's a technical acquisition, machlokas, argument, in terms of how... when kesef is effective, when it's not, but in terms of the understanding of this case, they seem to be in agreement. So that's the second camp that Rishonim, who said that you need an additional kinyan. Okay, the third camp, and we'll add another party to this camp today, is the idea that that in effect, when the original kinyan of that first chamor, that in and of itself obligates the masker to provide a replacement. And there the question is why. So first we have the Rashba. The Rashba argues that when you pull that original chamor, it is not just, you are not just acquiring the rights to use that chamor, you are also acquiring, or he is also committing all of his assets to backing up this agreement and allowing you to reach your destination. It is essentially an obligation. It is a liability that he now has, that he owes you a chamor to get to that destination. As I said last week, just like when you borrow money from someone, you are now, all of your assets are backing up that obligation to pay him back. And so even if you don't have any money on you, he can then resort to taking another one of your possessions. Or Ashba is saying, beyond that first chamor, now all of his possessions are committed to finishing this arrangement. That was one approach. Rabbeinu Yehonatan was where I think took the whole discussion differently, where he said we have these two elements of the agreement, the actual object, number one, and the task, the malacha that you agreed upon. And Rabbeinu Yehonatan is saying what we need to emphasize is the second. We shouldn't be focusing so much on this requirement or a commitment to giving him a chamor. What we should be focusing on is the commitment to allowing you to get where you need to go. Either to transport your merchandise or to, for you to reach that destination. And Rabbeinu Yonatan's lashon was that he himself, the renter, or the renter is obligated to bring him to that place. Now, he's saying the way that I'm going to do that is by providing you an animal to get there with. But it's really his own personal obligation. And so that transcends any particular animal or any particular asset. The personal obligation. The worker, it's almost like a cobbler. He himself is obligated to finish the transaction.
So this is not, it's not really about being an owner, it's about being a broker.
What if he doesn't
own any donkeys?
Right. Or anything.
Right. Yeah. That's
the
broker.
Right, that's what I want to get to. That's the difference. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Could that be the other way? If you do the mishicha, you're saying it's no longer a moris dam. You're saying that this is the animal.
So
that's what the Rav and the Mukayev said.
They are saying.
Yes. Essentially. Right. But the Rasp is saying that you're focusing too much on the donkey and not enough on the substance of the agreement. I think
so
that's the...
It turns it into... Hamor is that?
So I think the Rasba. I mean, look,
not
every time. Well, think about it.
But that's what the Mashiach does.
Well, every time you're going to have to give him some donkey, right? I mean, eventually. So, you know, what?
You're looking at Mashiach differently. Jerry.
What?
Jerry's looking at Mashiach differently.
Yeah.
Meaning?
Jerry's looking at it Mashiach as like, I picked this up, therefore this is what I'm
right,
doing.
Right,
the
right.
Rasba is telling you that's not Mashiach.
Yes, yes, exactly.
But others?
Might be saying that, yeah.
Might be saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So the Rosh was saying you shouldn't see it that way. Now, I just wanted to add a third option within this camp. I don't think it goes as far as the other two, but just an interesting one. Take a look at source number one. So the Ritva has the same question. Okay, it took us a bit of time to get to source number one, but we're doing well here. So the... oh, boy. So the Ritva asked the following question. Im Tomar. Same question. He actually says lama, which is interesting. So, but first he says, why are you obligated to provide a replacement? Uvameh, zacha, there's the vameh. Hasocher b'chamor ha'acher shelo yuchal masal azabor. What gave the socher, the rentee, the rights to this other donkey such that the maskir cannot be choser? Same question. So he says, that what you need to do is you, what does it mean? It doesn't mean you actually, this is the Ramban, you don't actually have to provide a replacement. Rather, either you give him another one, or give him his money back. Yeah, you're right. You could either refund him. So that's what the Gemara means, either refund him or get your, or give him another one. That's the Ramban. But he says, since he pulled the first donkey, and the socher, the rentee, acquired it for the ability to do his task, and he is now obligated to pay the maskir. He's created an obligation to pay the rental fee by pulling this first chamor. And he can't retract. But with that benefit of now being entitled to the rental fee, the renter, the masir, is now obligated to provide a replacement. Ki'ilu kana miyadeo, as if they had done a kinyan sudar. So essentially what the Ritva is saying, the kinyan sudar element is built into the arrangement, meaning chalifin, the agreeing, there is such a thing in halacha called the kinyan chalifin. To use a politically loaded term, it's basically a quid pro quo, right? Which means I get A, in return I give you B, right? So if it's a chamor and we talk about macha parba chamor, I am giving you, we're trading a donkey for a cow, so I give you my cow. Once you do that, once you get the cow, I have already acquired your donkey because it's reciprocal. So he sees within this case a sort of chalifin. The benefit, me, I receive your commitment to pay me. You receive my commitment to provide you with the chamor until you reach your destination. And that's what enables it to transcend this particular chamor. It's that added element of the hana and the reciprocity of it. So just to sort of round out this shitos here, the Ritva essentially is saying that what we're doing here is a type of kinyan chalifin. Okay, so what I wanted to discuss next is the following question, which Rabbi Torchino just alluded to, which is, what if we're all talking about a case where he's providing another donkey? Well, what if he doesn't have another donkey? What if this was the only donkey he had? Or, to say it even further, and this is something Pesach raised to me after last week's shiur, what if he has nothing? What if now at this point, or at that point, let's just say the case was so, the master didn't have any other assets to his name aside from this donkey? Would that change the equation? So any thoughts before we think about it, right? So if you take, let's say, the Muki Yosef's approach, what is the Muki Yosef essentially saying?
Coming in.
Oh, is he really? Ah, good. Beautiful.
Perfect timing.
Perfect. So, Pesach, we mentioned your question of the of not having any possessions, the master not having anything, right? Nothing to his name, literally broke. So, if you're the Muke Yosef, and it's a Kinyan Kesef that gets the other Hamorim, okay? What if you have no other Hamorim? Kesef can't be Kone just, you know, nothing. It has to be Kone something. It would seem that there would be no obligation then. Because there's no room for Kinyan Kesef.
Can't you say the Kesef acquired the properties?
What properties?
He has no properties.
So first of all,
he said he has no donkeys.
First of all,
he has no properties.
So even if, but even so, could you say the Kesef had that? I don't think the Muki Yosef is viewing it that way. In fact, if you look at his lashon, and the Muki Yosef actually, I didn't bring it for you, unfortunately, makes this clear. He says, if you have another donkey, that's what the Kesef acquired. Again, because he's not viewing this as anything other than, you know, as he's taking Jerry's perspective here. It is essentially like Hamor Zeh, and the Kesef says there's another Zeh that you can replace with this first Hamor. Right? So like the Kesef says, I am now also acquiring a replacement donkey in the event that the first one dies. But it's nothing beyond that. On the other end, on the other extreme was, if you, let's say, take a middle Shita, take the Rashba. So Rashba is saying that it is the commitment to all of his possessions. So even if he doesn't have another donkey, but if he has any assets, those assets are now committed to backing up this agreement. But what if he has nothing? If he doesn't have a penny to his name, then there's just no assets to speak of. So that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question, which I want to get to in a second. If he gets future assets, that's an interesting question, which I want to get to in a second. So himself, that's where I think you have Rabbeinu Yehonatan, right? If the point is that he himself, you're saying selling himself as a slave? I don't think we do that.
Well, if he has no property,
I don't think that. Well, I think Rabbeinu Yehonatan, I don't think you'd actually say that you have to do, like, you know, some quid pro quo work, but the Rabbeinu Yehonatan's perspective, if the point is that you are committed, so then I would agree with you, yes, that it's not about your possessions or about another donkey, it's about you. So that commitment is still there. If we take a look at the source number two, so the Achron discussed this within the context of the question of something that Rabbi Torchiner just mentioned, which is, can you future liability? Can I obligate myself to pay assets that I acquire in the future? And this is not such an interesting thing. It's essentially the question of, is a person able to be mishabe davar shelo bala olam? Can I commit properties I don't even have yet? So the Nesivos here says, and this is how he explains the Rambam. We'll take a look at, hopefully, the Rambam later. We'll try to move it a bit now. So the Rambam has this very weird thing, which he says that you're obligated to, I think it's the best way of saying it, you have to give him another Hamor, but if you don't, and then he continues. So what does that mean if you don't? Nesivos says, well, what he means is, do you have another one? Essentially, if the Masker had a replacement at the time of the original agreement, he has to provide another one. But if he didn't, so then he can't, and he doesn't have to. Even if he acquires one the second, and he says, because a person does not obligate himself to an asset that he doesn't possess at the time of that obligation.
Does that always hold true? So for example, if I borrowed from you $1,000, and now for whatever reason I don't have the money to pay it back.
And I have nothing to my name.
Nothing. But in a year from now, I have $1,000.
So this is a longer discussion. If you think, if you listen to the Ksuva, right? Right. Or the Asid Lemikni. Is that in the time? So you have to stipulate that explicitly. So then, if you look here, the Nesivos here, I don't know if he brought, you have to, even if you think it worked, you have to say explicitly, Belashon Chiyuv, I am obligating myself even for future possessions that I acquire.
And you do that.
That's a question. And actually, if you look at source number three, the Machane Ephraim says that this is actually part of the argument here. Take a look at number three. Mitzvot devei arayvit elu nira dechayv l'ham lo chamor acher mikol makom va'afim lesli be'ein. Right there, from the Ravid here, who talks about this idea of the Kinyan Sudar, it seems that you have to give him another one, even if you don't have one on hand. So his proof is that the Ravid's bothered by the following question. He says, even if you'll say I verbally obligated myself in providing a replacement, what's to stop me from backing out?
Even if you gave money.
Right, and even if I paid, exactly. Even if I paid, all that is mishapara. All I did was I paid you money. It's not binding. And it's a bad thing to do when we say that you're going to, whoever, you know, mishapara, as we talked about, you're going to get punished for doing so. So that's what he says. So if I pay money, so all I get is a mishapara. And he says there's no mishapara in this case because he's honest. He's honest meaning he has no way. What am I supposed to do? The chamor died. You know, how am I supposed to help you? And he says, "V'im isa d'davka k'sheyesha who desfirli d'chayv la malo chamor acher." My own say, meaning if you're saying the case is that you only have to provide him with another chamor when he has one on stock, why is it an onis? Right? Because the Ravid says it's not your fault that you couldn't provide him with another one; your animal died. Says the Machane Ephraim, "What do you mean? Give him another one. Why shouldn't there be a mishapara if you back out? Rather." It must be that Ravid thinks that you have to give another one even if you don't have one yet. Theoretically, you should be obligated, but you just don't have one. And that's what Ravid says, you're anus. You know, that's what Ravid says, you don't get this mishapara because there's nothing that you can do. But it seems, right, that you would be obligated even if you don't have one on hand if you get one later. And he said, take a look at the bold. Ha'ola meha amor da Ravid zasrile de chosha kanamiyado chayv laha melocha mor acher. Afilu ilesle. The Ravid thinks that as long as you did this kinyan sudar, you have to give him another one, even if you didn't have one at the time. And ladas herman barifab, he's far as Rav Rishon, and he quotes an argument as about this issue. Afilu kanamiyado lo mahani, it wouldn't work even if you did a kinyan sudar. De'ein ada mishav. A person cannot commit something that he doesn't have on hand. Unless you did a specific kinyan, I'm a chayev myself and all my future possessions. Unless you do that, you're not obligated in future assets. And so the Machane Ephraim and the Nesivos are seeing this as in terms of the question of can you commit future assets. What I would add though is that I think according to the Rashba and Rabbeinu Yehonatan, it doesn't need to be just about do you have another chamor. At least according to the Rashba, the question should be do you have anything to your name? As long as you do, he should have recourse to those other possessions. And maybe according to Rabbeinu Yehonatan, it doesn't matter if he has nothing because you are the one that's obligated. Okay.
Does bankruptcy exist in halacha?
We did this.
I know. I don't remember at all.
Years ago.
Like zero.
Yeah, so there's a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
But is this part of the discussion?
Basically, the classic enactments that you're thinking of for, you know, for government regulations are something that halacha needs to fit into its system. It's not like...
No, right.
Not in secular, just halacha. If we lived in a halacha state, like, is this part of the discussion? I know we don't have time to go off into it, but is this part of the discussion?
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's, as we're saying, it's a longer discussion, and it has to do with Shibud Aguf and Shibud Mammon and things like that. So the next thing I want to talk about was what the Ramban sort of mentions is, what about the first half of the journey here, right? So the Chamor died halfway. Do I have to pay for the first half, according to all these opinions? And we could ask this in terms of a case of Chamor Stam, where theoretically, according to many Rishon, there should be an obligation to provide a replacement. Let's say I can't. I don't have the money. Or I refuse to, let's say, something like that. I don't know. Well, and we can ask this in the case of Chamor Zeh, which the Gemara relates to, which is, you know, now the first Chamor died, and the carcass isn't worth enough to rent another one, or I can't find another one to rent. There's no, you know, Chamorim available. So should you be obligated in the first half of the journey? So on a first glance, what would you say? Should you have to pay for the first half of this arrangement? You know, he got you halfway to Toronto. Should you pay for that half?
Sure.
So I would think yes. Actually, I would think that at first glance, you probably should be obligated. Because
what? If you're buying a service only to get to point B, then it hasn't been fulfilled.
Yeah.
Your obligation only arises really when you get to point B.
Oh, good. So,
there's
partial performance. That's part of the question. So I think there's two questions to ask here, which is, number one, are you buying...
Partial performance.
We'll discuss that. Okay, so we'll discuss that. Well, I like to. It might depend on whether or not was this beneficial at least toward you achieving your final destination.
Yeah, I see that as like when you have 9 for a million, it's worth nothing. You have 10, you have a million.
So the question is it parallel to this or is it not?
It's not.
Okay. Yeah. So let's frame the thinking a bit. So I think one question you'd ask is essentially what you're raising, which is this an all or nothing proposition? Did I give you a service and the service was to get to point B, and if I don't get to point B, it's nothing? Or is there such a thing as, number one, could there be objective benefit? Meaning, even if it didn't help you get to what you wanted to do, but it was helpful, generally, it's people would pay to get from, you know, even if you wanted to go to Toronto, they would pay, let's say, for traveling from America to get to Niagara Falls, because that's also, quote unquote, objectively worth something. Or do we say it has to be worth enough to allow you to get further toward your eventual goal? And I think another thing you could say is that if you focus more on the, I had to give you a certain type of chamor, it's not a bet. We focus less on the malacha, the task element, and more on, I had to provide you with a certain type of animal which enables you to accomplish that task. You could say, look, I provide you with the animal. Okay. It happens to be that something happened on the way and it died. That's not my fault. And so at least I should get paid for the trip that you did make. So you take a look here at the Gemara itself addresses this question. It would seem. So Amar Rav Baruch Baruch Amar Rav. A person rented a donkey to ride on it. Who made to lo bachatzia derech? It dies halfway. Says the Gemara, no tin lo scharos bachatzia derech. You have to pay for half the journey. Sounds like an affirmative. Yes, you do have to pay. Vein lo lavel taromos, and all you can do is complain. So Gemara is bothered by this. Wait a second. Number one, what case do you have where you have to pay and you can complain? So hey chidami, what's the case? If another replacement's available, it's frequent, easy to find another chamor. Taromas mayavite, why are you complaining? Meaning you'll get to the final destination, you can pay the same amount of money you agreed to pay me. We'll just go to another someone else. So what's the problem? I'll note that. So, and we don't say, but I have to deal with another person, because we only say that when it's the first person's fault. Meaning in the next case, Lingmara, where I decide, okay, I had enough, I don't want to ride on your ship anymore. So then we can start complaining and I have to get somebody else. I liked you. But if I didn't even mean to, the animal died. So we're not going to say that's enough of a reason to create taromes. So, and then the Gemara says, more importantly for us, and if you can't find a replacement, you have to pay in. Meaning, you left me in the middle of nowhere. Why am I paying you at all? So says Gemara, a very cryptic answer. Lo'olam de'loshkiach lagure. No, we're talking about a case where you can't rent at another one. You are sort of stranded. Umishun de'amar le'. And he could tell him, ilu bas de'mesiad hacha. Ab agra bas de'mesiad. If you had wanted to go until here, wouldn't you have had to pay for that? Now, what do we think of that answer? Like, you guys are too good. Okay, if I had wanted to go to here, I would have had to pay. But I don't! I want to go elsewhere. Why does that make a difference? So what is the Gemara? It would seem, one way of reading this Gemara is that the Gemara is essentially saying, doesn't matter. Meaning, sort of the deal's off, it's not his fault. And we sort of evaluate based on, you know, is there any objective worth to this service that he did provide to you? But we'll get to that in a second. Then the Gemara continues, and this is an important to keep in mind. Hey chadami, ida amalei chamor stam, hachayv lahamelo chamor acher. If he just said chamor stam, meaning, again, generally, I will provide you with a chamor. So why is there an option of stopping halfway? Even if it died halfway, you have to give him another one. He doesn't need to find a replacement from somebody else. And therefore, that's where the Gemara stops. Ida amalei chamor zeh, im yesh de mehalika yikach. And if he said this chamor, so you should sell the carcass and get another one. Gemara says, lo, tzricha b'she'em demel likach. We're talking about a case where it's not the carcass is not valuable enough to sell and then buy a replacement. Imesh demel l'schor yischor. Says the Gemara, well, at least if the carcass, if it's valuable enough to rent a replacement, you should have to rent one. So then the Gemara says, Rav tamei dam rav lo machalina karna. Rav says, this is Rav's opinion, we don't use up the principle, meaning, since, you know, it's really his donkey, and he only said a chamor zeh, the master's donkey, he owns it. And now that it dies, all he will ever get back is the nevela. So we don't allow you to then use up the worth of that. Because if you rent out the animal with the money, he's not going to get anything back. And that's what Rav holds. So the first question then is, in the case of chamor stam, what do we mean when we say, chayev lahamin lo chamor acher? Do we mean, as we've already said, that some Rishon will say, what it means is that you have to actually provide a replacement. However, the Ramban says, no, what it means is you shouldn't have to pay at all. We shouldn't say agra b'ayla mesavle unless you provide him with a replacement. Right? This is the Ramban's verse 5 we allude to. Hadar amrin idil amrle chamor stam, negrle chamor achrin. Apirish v'ilo, lo yahivle klum. If you don't provide a replacement, that's your option, but you get nothing. You get zero, zilch. You don't get paid for the first half of the arrangement. The Rambam also can be read, and I think there's a compelling read to say the Rambam agrees. And then here's this very problematic Rambam we alluded to last time, which I'd like to address now. Take a look at the Rambam source 6. So it says, Meta behemo nishra. The animal dies or is crippled, we'll say. Whether or not, whether you rented it in order to carry cargo, or you rented it to ride on, if you said chamor stam, you have to provide, in all cases, a replacement. And if you don't, so that's the first red flag. What do you mean you don't? You just said you need to no matter the circumstance. What does it mean? And then you don't do what you need to do. But as the Rambam says, Yesh le socher limchor ha-behema v'likapa behema acharet. Oh, socher b'damea. Then, essentially, sounds like it reverts to a case of chamor zeh. If you don't provide a replacement, the socher can take the carcass, can buy, use it to sell it and buy another animal, or even use the money from the sale to rent another animal. If there's not enough money to buy a replacement, until you reach the place that you stipulated. Then he says, if it was a case of a specific chamor, I am renting to you. If you rented it out to ride on it or to transport glass utensils, which are very sensitive and right will fall off if you're not careful with them, then, will break, if they fall off. Not just fall off, but break. Yes, glass breaks when it falls off of a donkey. That's not too controversial. Then, if there's enough money to buy another animal, you do that. Again, if you can rent another animal with the funds, you do that. And then he says, "V'im d'mel olika v'lo liskar notin lo scharos shachatia derech v'im lo alav elo taromes." And if there is not enough money to even rent a replacement, and there's not enough, then you pay for halfway, and all you have is a complaint. Okay, so what's interesting here, the Rav notes here in source 7 is he never mentions the idea. In the Reisha of paying for half the journey, right? In the, when he's talking about Chamor Stam, the Rambam says, if he doesn't provide you with another one, then what you do is you use the funds to buy another animal. But he never says, if you don't have enough funds, you pay him for half the journey. In the case of Chamor Zeh, the Rambam is clear that even if there isn't enough money to buy a replacement with the sale of the carcass, you still have to pay him schar shachat yadara. And what the Rav argues is like the Ramban says, in the case of chamor stam, you don't have to pay for the first half of the journey. And he says, essentially, that whether or not you have to pay depends on whether we focus on the service or just the rental object. And the Rav argues, in a case of Chamor Stam, when you didn't specify a particular animal that you're renting out to him, he has, because it's any animal, until I get to where I need to get to go, he's obligated himself to get you to the destination, and it's an all or nothing proposition. Either he gets you there, or he doesn't, because his obligation is to get you there. Whereas, in the case of Chamor Zeh, once he specifies this donkey, so then he hasn't obligated himself to get you there. He's obligated himself to provide you with a donkey which is fit to getting you there, but not to actually accomplish the task. And therefore, then it is not an all or nothing proposition. Then we have to start figuring out what is the value of the first half of the journey. Right? Take a look at the Rav here. Source number 7. Nir levar de bischar behemasachar behemastam. If you rent an animal generally, ikar aschirut chayse shal masker het chayev havi et asocher v'amaso ad lemakon chetzo besof aderech. He is obligated himself to bring the rentee till his destination. The mishum hachi hiskel behemastam. That's why he just said behema without referring to anything in specific, because it's not just this animal. It's till I get to where I need to go. If the first animal dies, and the masker does not fulfill his obligation to provide to the socher another animal, and you can't use the carcass to provide a replacement, Hasocher patur milishalim the gamre, he's completely exempt from paying. Vasocher eno mishalim afilu achatia derek shekvar asim beham arishono. He doesn't even pay for the first half of the journey he did with the first animal. Mishen dechevan shemita habehema v'amaser misariv lahamid lo'od behema acherek kefitz na'o. Since the master had an obligation to give you a replacement until you reach your destination, he's refusing to do so. Okay, as the shlomer dechos hira michila haytamekatos. The whole thing was a mistaken acquisition. It was a false deal, because we agree that you're going to fulfill your obligation and get me to where I need to go, and you're refusing to do so. I think you need to add here, the Rav is arguing for the Rambam. While the Rambam doesn't agree with the Rishonim, we say that you've actually obligated yourself in terms of your assets. None of your money, it's not binding. He can't force you to give another chamor if you don't want to. But you do have an obligation, a personal obligation, that you are not fulfilling. You are not fulfilling your side of the agreement. You are being unfaithful to the agreement, and that, at least, that's what destroys the commitment from the side of the socher. And that's all in the case of Behema Stam. So essentially, since he committed to the service, and he's not fulfilling that service, you have the right to say, I'm not paying you for anything. He says, He says, in the case of Behem Azu, you didn't obligate yourself to reach the destination, because you're saying it's just this donkey and no more than that. And therefore, you don't say it's a mechatos. There's nothing I'm doing now that I shouldn't be doing. Right? I'm not withholding you from anything that I owe you. I just said I'm going to give you this chamor, and then we evaluate the first half of the journey separately. So essentially, the Ram and the Ravid are saying that since it's sort of a commitment to fulfilling part the whole thing, the service, then the first part is rendered null and void. I wonder whether the other Rishonim agree to this. I think you could argue that if you don't think that the main part here is a service, you come up with another way of obligating the masir in providing another one. Maybe you should pay for the half of the service, even in case of Chamor Stam. But that's in the case of Chamor Stam. What about in the case of Chamor Zeh? So in a case where I am not obligated to provide a replacement, but I do have an obligation to at least let you use the carcass to buy a replacement, and say either there is no replacement available or there's not enough money. What happens in that case? Do we say it's an all or nothing proposition, or how do we evaluate it? So if you remember, the Gemara said, wouldn't you have had to pay to get here if you wanted to? But we said, that's a very strange idea, but I didn't want to. Tosfot in source number 9 is very bothered by this question. It says, so tema. Since he didn't want to go to there, why pay him at all? He says, when we say you can't find another one, it doesn't mean you can't find another one at all. It means you can't find another one for the same price.
Shouldn't you have to pay the person for the extra?
Why don't you have to pay for the extra? Very good. Natan says, Tosos. The ain tzarich lefachod amasir mischaro, masha nosinat yotzer me'at mikam ve'ela, kevin d'havi anus. Right, it wasn't my fault that the animal died. It's nothing I did wrong. I wasn't negligent. It just died. Animals die sometimes. Assuming I gave you a perfectly healthy animal, therefore I'm not liable for the increase in price. Now, it is interesting, though, that what Tosfos says in his first answer. Again, so the case is you can get to your destination. You will get there. And I helped you get there. But not for the same price. What if it was a much bigger price? Which some of the Achronim ask on Tosfos. Why does it matter how much more I have to pay? What if I had to pay a lot more? You're still getting me there. So it would seem that Tosfos is at least saying that I think you have two requirements. Number one, the socher is only obligated to pay. What triggers that obligation is that, number one, it's partial performance. Meaning, although you didn't get to the destination, you helped me get to the destination, right? And number two, it's not just a question of distance. It's a question of, it wasn't considered hana'a, benefit. Is this something that a person would say, yeah, I'd like to do that. This helps me in getting my destination. If I had to pay a lot more money, you know, like, thank you, but that wasn't very helpful. Like, you know, the fact that I had to pay, an exorbitant amount to get to the rest of the destination shows that what you did to me was essentially worthless. So
this presupposes that you can get there.
Yes.
Look at the case where you can't get there.
Correct. And I think in this answer, Tulsa is saying it needs to be partial performance, meaning you have to, in a case where you agree to a task, it has to be that you have now helped him in terms of achieving that agreement, right? It needs to be that you helped him get there, and he will get there. If you won't get there, then you're not obligated.
It has to be beneficial performance.
Beneficial, partial, exactly. Beneficial, partial performance. Exactly. That's exactly how I would say it. Then he gives a different answer. I would say Tosfos still has a pretty high standard in terms of what triggers an obligation from the socher to pay. But, again, he's still saying that, you know, you will have to pay in some circumstances, even if you have to pay more money. However, if you look at the second answer, maybe you won't get there. Maybe you won't find a replacement at all. But this is also a desirable place to sell your merchandise. So it's interesting. I think the difference between the first and second answer of Tosfos is, I think it's still beneficial partial performance. The question is how we evaluate partial performance. Is it only in terms of our original agreement, or is it in terms of the overall overarching goal of the agreement? Meaning, you said you wanted to get to Toronto to sell your merchandise in the marketplace. You only got us Niagara Falls. But what you really wanted to do is get to a place where you could sell your merchandise. And I allowed you to do that. Now, it does seem from Tosfos, and Tosfos Rosh echoes this in Source 10, we won't read it for time, constraints, but it does seem that it has to be beneficial. It has to be something where I would go there, if, you know, a normal merchant would go there to sell their stuff. Right? At least there I could say that you enabled me to get to a place where I can do what I wanted to do.
But in that case, where there is these Mardia, this Tosfos answer suggests they have to pay the whole
sekira.
Not a pro rata.
Why? Okay, that's interesting. Okay, that is a good question. I think you could still say that, you know, ultimately, you know, that's actually, I want to think about that more. I mean, I think what he's saying.
Or the other side, as opposed to zero obligation.
Right. I think you're making a good point. I think evidently partial performance is still partial, meaning we can't say you did exact. I did say that you need to get me to here. You know, that does still have relevance, but I think it is a good question with this approach. If you take a look at... Okay, so I just want to make sure to get a few more sources in here. If you take a look at the Torah reading parents, you'll get a completely different impression. He says, "Ilu akam boyle meisel av agar boyle meisel." Now, Pirish, v'yochol lomar shen neyu bekach. He could say, "I benefited you." D'shema af be'oto makom shemira chamor yochalim chor. Maybe even where the chamor died, you can still sell your merchandise. Right? Completely on the other spectrum here. Rabbi Peretz is saying, as long as, quote unquote, we can say it was beneficial. You don't need partial performance. You need it, you need to say that you've benefited the socher. And that's all. As long as we could say, well, you could sell it here. Some people might want to buy it. That's enough. Even further, if you take a look at the, what the Ritva says here is that you have to wait. Meaning, essentially, I got you to halfway. As long as it's a place where you're not stranded in the middle of nowhere and your merchandise isn't at risk, if you have to wait for another one, then I still have to pay you for the first half of the journey. And the point is, the Gemara is making is there's no one here right now who you sell you I replace the chamor for you. But if you wait a day or two, then maybe you will get to that point. If you look at the Maharal, without getting into some of the specifics of the Shach Matari here, Maharal says, it doesn't matter. The point is that you won't find a replacement. Good, so walk. Walk the rest of the way, for all I care. I got you here. You have to pay for that. And the truth is, if you look at the, I think maybe, if the Rif and the Shulchan Aruch, they don't mention this requirement that it was beneficial for him to get halfway there. They just say you have to pay for getting him halfway there, right? Just take a look at the third line there. Give him, pay him for halfway, and let him, and says let him have an avela. And he just says you have to pay him. Now the Ramah adds in here, right? Take a look at the Vahad Yamrina on that line. Well, the Ramah notin lo scharo mechad tederes haynu shiyachol limchor scharo tosham o shiyachol lischor chamor acher makom shor tzeilech. No, it's only in the case you get another one, or you can sell your stuff there. That's beneficial. But the Gra notes that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch itself don't mention that. They just say you have to pay for halfway. And I think one way of understanding this is in terms of the question of, do we see this original agreement as being intact or no? Meaning, I think what the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are saying, in the case of Chamor Zeh, I had to provide you with this donkey. Okay? This donkey died. It wasn't my fault that it died. So now, the deal essentially is off. Okay, you can, when you can use an Avela to get another one. What?
Maybe you can just say that's the deal.
Right. Right, that's what I meant. Okay, I agree. Meaning that's what I meant to say when I said this chamor. And so, regardless of whether or not it's partial performance, I gave you a donkey. That's what the agreement was. You used it. You have to pay me for it. Whereas, the more you focus on, the other Rishonim are saying, no, the deal's still there. And it's still in force, at least in a case where, theoretically, I should be able to use the money to buy another one, but the replacement's not available. Since the deal is still on, we view the agreement in context of the original commitment. You had to provide me with a partial performance of the original commitment because the original commitment is still in force. It's just practically we can't realize it. We didn't quite finish these parts, so we'll finish the discussion next time. Hopefully we'll get to discuss a case where not just the animal dies, but it gets impaired, and when do you pay if it's impaired? Does it have to be that you can still do basically what you wanted to do? What happens in those circumstances? Thank you very much. Shabbat shalom.